welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, cause we've got him on the spot. Welcome back. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Hello and welcome to the Inspired Astrology Podcast. Welcome back to me, really. It's been some time since we produced an episode, but I am glad to be back, to be settled, and of course, bringing on very special guest, Jonah Emerson Bell, to talk about this Libra full moon lunar eclipse coming up on March 25th, 2024. Enjoy.
Jonah, it's been some time.
Yeah, it has. Some would say too much time.
I think it's been too long, and I appreciate everybody's patience in letting me get settled into a new culture and for letting Jonah and I also get through midterms of our schools and all the things, but I digress. I got to meet you in person in December.
I know, that was amazing. I get to see how tall you actually are. And how big your aura is in real life.
You're taller than I thought you were too. Yeah. So I think that to those like listeners who are new to the Inspired Astrology Podcast, Jonah and I have been following each other's work for a number of years now. And I think it was like between 2022 and 2023 that we started to become colleagues, I would say, just through our journey as astrologers. Joan is also a very skilled tarot reader and wizard extraordinaire. And we're both in school doing mental health work services, trying to find out how that, how evidence-based practices will fit into our journey as healers. So Joan and I were like, holy shit, like we both lived in Red Hook and holy shit, we're both doing this stuff and, you know, these types of things. So we started doing the podcast on full moons together last year, and it's been great. And I get to learn so much from this brilliant brain of yours. And I feel like I get to benefit so much just from having a good laugh with you every time we do these recordings. So, but yeah, Jonah and I had never met in human. It was always like Zoom calls and all that. And on my great adventure to Baja from from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which that's a 3,500 mile drive. And I did it in a 2010 Ford Transit Connect named Cherry with my partner and my puppy. And there were many stops and many places that we got to be with our people and folks that we were just newly connecting with, and meeting Jonah in person and getting to sleep on your couch, which is a Jean couch. That's pretty epic. And get to see all of like Jonah's space and see your world in Santa Fe. I think that was probably one of the greatest highlights. And we got to hang out with Michael and Bad Pastor and have some like real astrology talks, which was a great experience for me. I don't have the opportunity to do that unless I go to conferences or speak with other astrologers. So thank you for all the gifts. It was a blast. I can't wait to come back through and hang out some more.
Yeah, it was my honor and my pleasure and privilege to get to host you and Tree. And I really hope you come back. I'll give you a TV tattoo. And my astrology buddies in Santa Fe were starting to do more regular like hangouts and potlucks so that we can have some in-person astrology time, which feels really good. Like I started this practice mostly over Zoom and taking like Zoom classes and like different online workshops and, you know, communicating with a lot of people through the magic of the internet, which I think is great and kind of a great Aquarian phenomena. But I don't know, there's something that is lost in the actual not having that in-person connection and being able to like form actual community in physical space. And so I don't know, it's just great when that we were able to meet and hang out. And I'm so excited for your adventure and the life that you are building for yourself. And I'm also very glad that we're getting the band back together and rocking and rolling on the Inspired Astrology podcast. I'm glad that the stars aligned so that we could do this some more, because it's been a great joy for me getting to talk to you. One, because you're incredibly intelligent and very knowledgeable and a very skilled practitioner, and two, because you're my friend. And, you know, in our fast-paced modern world, it's hard to hang out with people when we're not working together sometimes. And so to have the excuse of, oh, we're on a deadline, really forces us to sort of carve out the time to be able to talk to each other and also get to share some wisdom and drop some knowledge about what's going on in space.
Space. Speaking of space, I'm in a very large room, so I'm kind of like cuddled up to my computer for the recording and have some pillows blocking the space a little bit. So if I sound tinny, deal with it. Thank you so much. So we are actually recording well in advance of this. I feel like you and I are both the types of personalities that we like the pressure to be on. A little bit of tension helps with the creative process. So for us to do this on the equinox, this beautiful day, on the energy that we're in is so cool. You know, just passing the Neptune-Sun conjunction and the full moon in Libra coming up on March 25th. Which is next Monday. It's going to be in the middle of the night where Jonah is in Santa Fe. That's going to be 1 mountain time, 1 a.m. And where I am, midnight, gong, in Mexico. So wherever you are, just do the math and we'll get started on that. But happy equinox to you, Jonah. Like, what does the Aries influx energy feel like for you?
It's exciting. And I think I have a hard time with Pisces season. I have a bunch of Sagittarius placements. And so they're all square to Pisces, another double bodied or mutable sign. And so, you know, there's always this kind of like, energy, right? And Pisces is kind of like half in winter, half in spring, right? It is that change over like the mutable signs always are. It's the moving from one season to the next and that kind of in between liminal space, which can be really uncomfortable. And I find Pisces season to be like really like wet and emotional and brings up a lot of like loss and the sort of things that we're letting go of and releasing, you know. And also I've experienced a lot of like letting go during that period of time. And I think that there's also something uncomfortable about coming out of the like hibernation space sort of entering into like the excitement, but it's not, we're not quite there yet, right? It's sort of like, you see the end of winter is in sight, but it's still cold out, right? It's still uncomfortable out. And I think that it's really challenging. And, you know, there's parts that are really like raring to go. And I think that's what Aries is all about, right? Is that bursting onto the scene and saying, I am here, right? And it's this new energy. And I always like to think about the glyph of Aries, which is the ram horn, but also it's the kind of sprout, right? It's the image of a sprout that is like forcing its way through the earth. And also, that takes a lot of energy to be born again, to emerge, right? To break out of our little seed pod and force our way through the cold crust of the earth. That takes a lot of energy. And that's scary, and it's difficult, and it's challenging, and it's frustrating. And so, you know, I think all of these things are kind of coming online simultaneously at the equinox, where we are in this moment of like complete balance for a moment, for just a breath. Right. It's that like moment where the out breath turns into the in breath. Right. And then like it all picks up again. Right.
Balance is a moving target. And I will repeat that as many times as I need to. Balance is a moving target. It's not someplace that you arrive and you stay there forever. You know, I think Libra is more like a gyroscope, you know, having to find its own sense of gravity and its own sense of like identity and staying stable within all the moving elements that come with it. Yeah, the glyph of Aries, you know, also representing the sex organs, right? Looks like an ovary and a uterus. It looks like a penis. Like it can represent so many things. Oh, giggle, giggle, giggle. Yeah, I said the penis word. I really like that, you know, some of the mundane astrology is really fun, like that you can tell an Aries from the shape of their brows down to their nose. It kind of creates the glyph symbol, which is true on my face. Often I can recognize other Aries just by looking at them. But what you said about the need for bravery to step out of the soil, but there has to be a sense of faith or even a devotion to an ideal or a dream, or even just like stupid faith to get you through the hard stuff, because it is terrifying to step out into the world. You know, the pitter patter of little feet are not humans, but bunny rabbits ready to pull that sprout out of the ground and eat it, you know, and it does take a lot to be brave.
Yeah. And I think,
go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
I was thinking about on your show the other day, how many people were kind of roasting Aries. And I feel like all the signs get a hard time about one thing or another, right? There's shadow aspects and there's positive aspects of everything. But I think Aries gets it pretty tough, selfish, childish, blah, 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 right? And sure, there are many unevolved Aries out there. Hopefully I am not in that cohort, but the point is, I think for this season is getting to know who you are. And that means that you're a question mark. You're constantly in a state of finding identity and pursuing what feels the most authentic for you. And that does take courage, and it does mean like kind of overstepping boundaries of fear. And if there's anything that I know my life themes have been about, it's conquering fears and anxiety and stepping into spaces that I never thought that I could fit into. And you often say like being able to take up space is something that you associate with Aries. And maybe that's something we can all learn from when we're not, we're taking up too much space or not taking up enough, which is sort of the nodal axis, I think, between Libra and Aries.
Yeah. Yeah. And that moving target of balance, right? Because in some situations we might not be taking up enough space, and then we overcompensate by taking up too much space, right? Like in the family system, if you didn't get to take up space, and then, you know, you find your independence and you're like taking up too much space to overcompensate, you know? And I think that I really see Aries as about this kind of quest for belonging, right? The mythology that's connected with it is the quest for the golden fleece, which is it bestows the divine right of kings, right? Whoever watches over the golden fleece has the right to rule. And so by its nature, it is sort of this like symbol of rulership, right? And if I have this, then it's okay for me to belong. Then I deserve to belong, right? And Jason's quest for the fleece is this quest to go, find this symbol of belonging, right? And what's also interesting about the myth of Jason and the Argonauts is Jason is the hero, right? He is the sort of youth who is like said yes to the call to adventure and is going out there to claim his right to belong in the world. And also he needs a lot of help from a lot of people, right? And so while Aries is a sign of individuation and is about separating from the kind of undifferentiated consciousness of Pisces, right? And claiming our space as an individual, that doesn't mean that we are just like the rugged individualist who is making our way in the world alone, right? We need the help of, Chiron, the teacher, right? The other heroes, the person who built the Argos, the boat, right? Jason needs the help of Medea, which is the lunar consciousness who uses magic to help him soothe the savage beast. Right. And none of this is possible without the aid of other people. And I think this is part of the kind of Aries myth is how do we claim our space and our right to belong as an individual, but within a relational context and container. Right. And how do we not just claim our right, but share what we have received through this journey with those around us. Right.
Inspiration comes to mind with that, like, because heroes inspire, and the fire energies are associated with that word of inspiration, enthusiasm. It gets people's fires going, literally. It's that idea of like, how do you heat things up so that they boil, or how do you heat things up so they move? And that's part of the alchemy. The elements all need one another, and yeah. Fire needs a container just as much as water needs a container. Otherwise it spreads all over the place, you know? And I hear about Aries who take a lot of energy from other people, you know, they turn into vampires without realizing it. And there's also those who find that kind of symbiosis, right? Like consuming the wood, but providing warmth to others, you know, that has to be reciprocal.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you brought up alchemy, because Aries season is traditionally when the great work of alchemy was begun, right? And so with the equinox, we have the astrological new year, right? So this is now beginning a new astrological year, a new revolution through the zodiac. And this is when the alchemist would begin the great work. And so this is an interesting thing to think about, what that alchemical process that we are engaging in, or that we want to engage in, or what the great work might look like, or what is the philosopher's stone that we are seeking to create, right? And it's the heat of Aries season, this fire element, that I think begins that process, begins that sort of activation, right? Of burning away what is impure, right? Mm-hmm. So that we have a sense of, this is what I'm looking for, right? This is the authentic core sense of self, or the pure essence that we're trying to distill through the sort of revolution around the zodiac and the full journey through the alchemical work. And you don't need to be like a lab alchemist to do this, right? But we can think about what the pure essence that we're trying to get to is, or what that philosopher's stone might look like that we are seeking to produce through our interaction and through our being in the world.
Could you give those who are unfamiliar with alchemy a definition of the philosopher's stone?
Okay, so my partner, Marlena Seven Bremner, would be much better suited for this. She's written a couple books on the subject, but I will do my best. As I understand it, right, the philosopher's stone is the it's what turns lead into gold, right? It gives the ability to transform consciousness, right? Transform our material world, transform the spirit. And it is the kind of culmination of I would say, like, the spirit coming to its true essence, right? And once we are able to kind of connect with the true essence of ourself, right, of our spirit, and our connection with the divine, we have this ability to transform what is difficult, challenging, heavy, Saturnian, right, oppressive and restrictive, into something that is of value, that radiates, that it has healing possibilities and potentials. And, you know, the Philosopher's Stone gives us the ability to transform the world, right, and to take that which was of little value and raise it up to something of the greatest worth.
I think that was a pretty good summation. Yeah, yeah.
I'll ask Seven what she thought about that.
I would love to have Seven. I think it'd be so funny to have like a triad if we could take turns talking, a bunch of fire signs hanging out together. That could be really interesting.
Yeah, well, I will raise that with her. And it's funny, she just did what's called a Deccan walk, which the Deccans are segments of the zodiac. Every 10 degrees is ruled by a different decan, right? Or is a different decan that has a different rulership. This is in traditional astrology, medieval astrology. This is another level of dignity, or like rulership of planets. And so there are 36 of them. Every sign has three. They're the first 10 degrees, the second 10 degrees, and the third 10 degrees of a sign. And she just finished writing about all of them. And you know, now, and she's like, oh man, I think I might be an astrologer now. And I'm like, you are, like, you have just slipped and fallen into becoming an astrologer. So, yeah, I will extend the invitation to her.
Yeah. I never considered myself an astrologer. I had no interest in learning it. It just started to happen when my mom stopped seeing clients and people started asking me. And in 2013, I was like, I am not an astrologer. I'm an energy worker. And my mom said to me, astrology is energy work, sweetheart. I was like, bam. Diane Hickman just knocking me down. So the Philosopher's Stone it's a metaphor, of course, you know, and in the stories about alchemists, this idea of changing lead into gold for a great king or something is another metaphor, you know, the lead of the material world and refining it into a space of purification. And that purification process is our goal as human beings, to develop our consciousness, to refine our consciousness. I think that's probably one of the most beautiful paths, because it often leads to service and to support of other humans. If it's pursued in selfishness, right, often the like trying to bypass reality, you know, it's not spiritual bypassing, it's trying to like get out of this world, it's trying to move beyond. And people will do all sorts of rushed paths with Kundalini, Vajrayana. Any spiritual tradition has this idea of like bypassing existence, like getting out of earth and out of this reality and moving on to something beyond. But, you know, what if heaven could be a state of consciousness all the time? And the Philosopher's Stone is much like that Holy Grail, or, you know, any of those concepts that we chase after. You know, we chase the dragon in some way to have something divine and meaningful to follow. And that can be done in many paths, right? All paths lead home.
Yeah.
And hearing about, you know, that alchemy and Aries are aligned, I think as an esoteric astrologer to some extent, that Mercury's esoteric rulership of Aries is right in alignment. And I think that we all know the Mars version of an Aries, and we know the difference with the Mercury version of Aries. And Mercury is always within a close proximity to the sun, right? And so we know that any human will have, you know, their sun sign, and then the Mercury is either in the sign before, the sign of, or the sign after, because it can't really vary much further than that. And you're speaking to a Mercury and Aries. So And it turns out this eclipse is going to be conjunct, or Mercury retrograde is going to be conjunct my Mercury this season. And we'll get into what that looks like. Finish what you started, humans. That's what I think of with the Aries Mercury in retrograde. Anyway, do you want to jump into the chart? We'll start swimming.
Yeah, where you want to start with?
Oh my goodness, how about the bucket formation that we're looking at? We talked about that for a moment, and if you pull up this chart, the majority of our planetary friends outside of Pluto are in the bucket between Pisces, Aries, and Taurus. And that is, it's not like totally outside of reality, but it's interesting as an astrologer. You look at enough charts and you're like, hey, you know, what does this mean? And Jonah was pointing out that full moons do have that excess feeling, like a bucket that's filled to the brim. And it's like we have to shed the skin, we have to pour out, we have to keep like allowing things to shed. It's the purification process of the full moon, like what needs to be emptied out so that you can refill with fresh waters, or cleansing that energy, the purification. And you know, I noted the visual of when you're trying to carry a really full bucket, like let's imagine that it's full of paint. If you go slow, that paint is going to get everywhere. It's going to get over you. It's going to get on the floor, because every step that you take, that bucket is swinging. And it's more Aries than anything to just like run across the room with that bucket and just have blind faith that hell or high water, that paint bucket is going to be mostly full when you get to the other side of the room.
Man. Yeah. It's giving me flashbacks of my days as a construction worker. But yeah, we have the sort of moon and south node at the very top of the chart as the kind of handle of the bucket, right? And yeah, I love this sort of imagery. I was thinking water and paint definitely like brings up the danger level, so I really appreciate that. We have this full moon in Libra. It's a full moon eclipse, right? It's on the south node. Lunar eclipses tend to be about endings, right? Because they're full moons, which is about a culmination, right? Seeing things culminate through the cycle and then noticing, okay, what needs to get poured out, right? Or what is being spilled to make more room, right? What needs to be adjusted so that we can enter into the next cycle with some more room and more capacity. And then the south node, which is a place of endings and release, right? It is the kind of accumulated wisdom of the past, right? That maybe no longer serves us anymore. It is the habituated patterns that we have become familiar with that maybe are not helpful. It's the, this is the only tool that I know how to use, so I'm going to use it all the time space. And so, we have this eclipse that is really asking us to let go and release some things and to make some more room and to really consider maybe some of the Libran themes that we are either harvesting, because Libra is a sign associated with the harvest, right? Being the marker of the autumnal equinox, right? And that is a harvest time. So thinking about what has been planted over the last cycle that we are taking time to harvest now, for better or for worse, right? And also like what needs to be composted, what needs to be released, what needs to be let go of, what might not be serving us anymore. And some of the Libran type themes that are maybe not as helpful for where we are and where we're headed.
That composting theme seems really in alignment with Pluto's placement in the chart. You know, what like the Grim Reaper that Pluto is associated with is this like, I'm here to take it for you, right? Or I will take it from you. It just depends on what you're willing to grasp or what you're letting go. So Pluto is trying to the moon in sextile to the sun. It's also making an inconjunct aspect with Mars, who's just entered Pisces. So that ingress into Pisces during Aries season That's a Pisces Mars doesn't really like being in that energy. Every time I feel it, it's trying to it's like a coal that got dropped into the ocean and it just can't, like, it can't really do anything. It's like, I can't burn. I can't like make things work. So placement is everything.
Yeah. And I think that, well, on one hand, right, I think that Mars in the Jupiter ruled sign of Pisces, there's a little more spaciousness, for the ruler of Aries. Right. So, it maybe mellows it out a little bit, coming from the Saturn ruled sign of Aquarius, which is maybe like, I need to rebel. I need to fight, right? This is constricting. Don't tell me what to do. You know, and being a little bit more reactionary. I think that Mars and Pisces doesn't know who to fight, which can be very frustrating, right? And I think one of the things that we're being asked with Mars and Pisces is to really tune into where does that energy need to go? Where is our energy best served? And I think on the, my favorite image of it is like being a spiritual warrior, right? Which, you know, also can go really sideways really quickly, right? If we become a crusader, right? Or are trying to, you know, become fanatical, I think is the downside, right? But if we are able to be the instrument of the divine, right? And be in right action as maybe the sword of the divine, whatever that looks like, in a non-harming way, I think that can be a great use of Mars and Pisces. But as the ruler of Aries, where the sun is moving into, and the ruler of the first decan of Aries, I think that it gives a little bit more ease and spaciousness than the kind of revolutionary, reactionary energy of Mars in Aquarius, hopefully.
Yeah. I think Mars in Pisces has to be careful not to internalize all the things that it feels. You can fight yourself. If you don't ever want to fight something outside of you, you can fight internally. And that can be very destructive in its own light. It can also be about like the machete in the jungle and helping to cut out the delusions that we might have, which is very Piscean. It could also mean like finding constructive ways to work with the energy in a creative capacity, right? But I mean, Pisces is super creative, and sometimes having that energy from Mars is really focused. And we'll see a lot of performers who have that inner planet in their chart makeup.
Yeah.
And we also see it a lot with alcoholism and kind of wayward souls, so to speak, you know, people who get lost because they can't find their direction. And Mars, more than any other planet, really does need something to be applied to, or be kind of like, you know, when you're about to hit a pinata and like they blindfold you and then spin you around, you know, it's like that's Mars and Pisces, except the blindfold never gets taken off. So like, where is the bat going to hit? Like, it's probably not going to hit that burrow. Nope. All right. So coming back to the fanaticism, we wanted to talk about Dune. And I feel like this is that perfect moment, because what you described, the fanatical spiritual warrior, sounds a lot like Paul Atreides, a.k.a. Usul.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, at the end of Dune 2, Paul sort of starts going off the rails, right? And we also see this kind of drunkenness with power, right? And, you know, I think that there's a lot of like themes that are playing out in that movie. One is the rejection of one's fate. And a lot of Dune 2 is the refusal of the call to adventure, right? And the pressure that keeps mounting as we refuse the call. I've been on a Joseph Campbell hero's journey kick lately, so forgive me. But, you know, it's also like an archetypal structure, especially for storytelling and film. And a lot of that is Paul refusing the call. And I think in our own lives, we can notice the places where we reject the call, right? Where we're asked to do something and we're like, I don't want to. And then the pressure just increases and increases. And in the case of Dune 2, Paul just gets more and more annoying, right? Until he finally like answers the call, but then maybe like swings too far in the other direction, and becomes sort of fanatical.
I watched it with Spanish subtitles instead of English subtitles for the language. So I was like sitting there trying to like getting like 25% of the subtitles when they were speaking in the Fremen language.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you don't get the gist of the film. Like it's another story of white saviorism. And I think that those who are only familiar with the 1984 that David Lynch was involved in, which is my childhood, like my dad had Robin Hood, like the cartoon version of Robin Hood. And then right after it is Dune, but it like started a little bit late where he recorded it off of TV. And so it's like hand in the box immediately. And so my childhood is sort of haunted by like, yay, Robin Hood. And then like,
put your hand in the box,
you know, like with the...
Yeah, going from like Roger Miller's whistling, right? Odalali, fear is the mind killer.
Which is kind of like the story of my life, let's be honest.
Yeah. I think that is a very kind of like 80s childhood encapsulated right there, taped off the TV. But I love that you bring in the like white saviorism of like Paul Atreides. Right, who is like the chosen, like the one who's like chosen to liberate everybody. And this piece around like waiting for the Messiah has become like incredibly disempowering for everybody because no one can take action until like the external savior arrives, which I think, you know, if we look at the world, like we're also caught in that trap in our own ways, right? Culturally and also individually, right? I'm looking for something to rescue me. I can't take this action because something better will come along, right? Oh, maybe like I shouldn't switch this job because maybe this is the best that I can do. And like, if it is the divine will, then like I will be told, right? And the places in where we disempower ourselves because we're waiting for that rescuer, that savior.
Right. Yeah, I was wondering like what the purpose was of bringing the series out at this time, like on a kind of a spiritual, cultural level. And as I was saying, like the 84 version of the film is really, there's so much cut from it, from the actual story, from the Herbert books. And the whole point of the story, as one of my friends pointed out to me, was like, Paul's an asshole. Like Paul is a dipshit, right? And the way that we're seeing it kind of play out, if you don't know the end of the story, is that like his hunger for power, and he gets fanatical and out of control, and it causes a lot of harm, which is something that he envisions in Dune 2. That idea of like the in all the superheroes that we see in films, like the Marvel universe, and that we're sort of waiting for Superman. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be like, well, you know, in Matrix, like everyone's Neo, right? Like, isn't that the like takeaway from that film, is that like we all are the one that we've been waiting for? And like, how do we fall in love with ourselves? And that feels very much like the Aries Libra dynamic, is that, you know, I guess as an Aries sun, Libra rising, Pisces moon, like I have always sought for my identity in other people. You know, my son's in the seventh house. Like I want to be other people. I want to imagine what it's like to be someone else. And I was speaking with Jonah about some of the identity shifts that I'm experiencing that he pointed out might be correlated with my own Pluto square and the approach to 40 and middle-essence, and that it almost feels like I'm waiting for someone else to give me permission to step into who I am. And that feels like the external saviorism piece as well. Like waiting for someone to tell you it's okay, or waiting for someone else to give you a name. And that guru mentality is what has gotten us in trouble again and again. You know, power is problematic again and again.
And I think, you know, just bringing it back to this eclipse, the kind of like Libra South node of like the beauty, the balance, right? People pleasing, wanting everybody to like us, right? These are things that we're like needing to let go of and release, right? Which could have very easily been like, oh, I want this person to like me, I will give them money, right? So that I am like raised up, so that I am seen, right? So that I am appreciated. And I think it's also important to think about the ruler of Libra, the ruler of the South Node, which is Venus, who is in the sign of their exaltation in Pisces. And a planet in exaltation is kind of raised up and has a lot more power, right? And they are able to sort of get their needs met and fulfill their agenda in a much easier way, right? And so if we think about Venus as the planet of values, right? And really being able to orient around our values, right? And have clarity around our values. And Venus is in conjunction with Saturn, which is a planet of like, let's get real here, right? This is like, you know, put your money where your mouth is, right? Saturn is where the rubber meets the road, right? And what do our ideals and values look like in messy 3D reality, where we need to pay our bills, where we need to, you know, put food on the table, where we need to make sure that our physical self is safe, right? And I think that one of the sort of shadow sides of Libra is the like, oh, this is idealistic. This is the beautiful ideal that I have had, right? This is the beautiful sense of balance that I am striving for. And then in 3D reality, that might not be ethical, that might not be aligned with our value system, right? And how do we kind of hold the ideal and the reality, right? Or how do we bring the ideal of balance in a kind of, Euclidean universe, right? Like the idea of like perfect spheres and solids, right? Down into a messy 3D reality where, you know, things are a 16th of an inch off or like a day late, right? Or where they don't actually function. And I think this is some of the stuff that's happening that we're experiencing with AI, right? Where it's really easy to generate an ideal in an AI bubble, right? But to bring that into Saturnian reality, into a time-based reality, is really challenging, takes resources, takes human hands, right? Takes time and energy and money to create things in a physical reality. And I don't think people have fully recognized that schism yet. And I think this is part of the Pluto and Aquarius. And I think that this is really coming up with the Libra South Node, or one of the things that's coming up with the Libra South Node, is maybe we need to abandon the ideal in some ways and get really connected with what our values actually are, right? And how our actions are in alignment or disalignment with our values, and how our ideals may or may not be in alignment with our values as they are played out in physical reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And glamour can be very alluring. Power can be very alluring.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Libra's diplomacy, but often there is a non-choice that gets made, right? In the desire to have all of the potential realities, sometimes no choice is made at all. Mm-hmm. And to not make a choice is a choice. And you mentioned Christopher Walken in Dune, just to wrap it back into that universe for a moment, and how you're like, he's playing Joe Biden. Tell me more about where that interpretation comes from.
Yeah, well, for those who haven't seen Dune, Christopher Walken is a very funny person to cast for the Emperor, because Christopher Walken can only play himself, but he's in a role where basically he's allowing like atrocities to happen to benefit his empire. And he's like this old man who is like basically doing nothing while war crimes are occurring, so he can come out on top. And I see Joe Biden as being in a very similar place. And I also see this as being a very like the dark side of Libra and the real like South Node aspect of Libra, which is diplomacy, at the expense of justice, right? Which we're seeing in Palestine and the US and European nations' role in what's happening in Palestine, where instead of forcing a ceasefire, instead of creating situations where humanitarian aid can be brought in, instead of really trying to put a stop to the war crimes that are happening and the atrocities that are happening, there is this level of diplomacy that is just enabling a lot of great harm and genocide to continue to occur, which is, I think, on a human level, like really harmful to the collective nervous system to sort of feel very powerless and watching this happen, while there is this sort of idea of diplomacy. And that is the shadow side of the Libra archetype, right? Is this, I want everybody to be happy, which would be, you know, the kind of ignorant part, right? The ignorant shadow is, I want everyone to be happy. Like, I don't want to piss anybody off. I want to pander to all of my voters. I want to pander to everybody and keep everybody happy while like great harm is occurring. And then the like kind of extreme end is manipulating other people to do your dirty work, and so that you can come out on top, right? And so I think these are the things that get exposed with an eclipse, right? And a lunar eclipse is the sun, it's a full moon. So the sun is shining its light onto the moon, right? So there's things that are being revealed. And what is being revealed is the kind of more shadowy, sketchy elements of the Libra archetype. These are the things that need to be released and let go of, right? The idea that diplomacy is diplomacy instead of action, right, is actually helpful, right? Talk is cheap, right? Especially when there's millions of people who are starving, right? When there's a famine that has been created by one government that has much more power than another group of people, and that the sort of diplomacy of, or like quote unquote diplomacy of like allowing this to happen while we're trying to find diplomatic solutions that everyone likes is just like really sketchy, right? And it's like really painful to have to watch, where there's probably other solutions that involve direct action, which would be the North Node Aries way to go, right? That puts a stop to what's going on and like creates actual change where human lives can be saved. And now I will get off my soapbox.
The divisiveness of this genocide is beyond me. You know, people getting punished for speaking out. It's beyond like what one can bear, you know? And I think there's so many of us that like every day, every sip of water, everything that we do, we think of these kids, of these mothers, of these innocent humans over there, and that we feel so powerless, you know, and that our calls don't feel important enough, or our emails to our legislators don't feel important enough, or that the marches or the demonstrations or the artwork or any of the things, but we just can't stop speaking about it. I've put out in my practices, I've been putting out like an extra yoga mat for the people who can't do self-care, right? And I put out a plate of food and a glass of tea with some food in it that's, you know, not perishable, right? Like it's packaged stuff, and some coins. And like, I have that at my dining room table right now, just to make an effort to be constantly thinking about all the people who don't have access to those things right now, and who don't have access to peace. And, you know, it feels like my throat's getting all clogged up, but it doesn't ever feel like enough, you know, just to dedicate the merit, or to wish all beings everywhere to be free from suffering and the root of suffering. That's I think that's where action has to happen. That it's our job to speak up and to do what we can where we can. But I think as mental health providers, like that we're on our way to become, you know, we see people suffering and our books tell us to give them Prozac or to try to EMDR their way out of the trauma of living in the world that we exist in today. And having hope, right? I think that Pisces season has offered us some visuals of the type of future that we want to have. I think that Aquarius season offered us the type of visions that we wanted to have for the world that we want to live in. And it takes work to get there. And we have this upcoming Jupiter-Uranus conjunction on April 20th. And it's closing in. It's within 5 degrees of an orb. And those who know me like know that I like a tight orb. We're always going to say that. Lauren likes a tight orb. I love the energy of this Jupiter-Uranus vision, you know, of a world that feels safe for people, you know, and it doesn't happen overnight. It's the domino effect, right? Like I think that transits do have that energy of a domino effect. And a lot of people believe in that, like, you know, reality is holographic and that we're just catching up on the line, the timeline, that everything has happened. It's already happened. And we're just sort of like, you know, just there in the timeline. I have a hard time buying into that. You know, I think that it's almost like a bypassing sort of thing to believe in, right? I think that we can affect change by seeing and projecting a different view of how we want to live in this world, and that another world is possible, a new world. And so when I looked at this chart, the first word that came to mind was hatching. You know, what are we trying to hatch here?
Yeah, and I think that there's, again, with Venus being the ruler of the Libra eclipse, right? I think that there's also kind of echoes of this upcoming Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, because that's happening in Taurus, which is another Venus-ruled sign. And I think that this Venus is moving from this conjunction with Saturn, which I think is being very grounding and being like, you know, how do we take the ideal, right? This vision, this Piscean vision, right? Of like happiness and joy and our ideal value system, and bring it into this world of sickness, suffering, and death, right? How do we hold both things? How do we ground this, right? And how do we make choices that are sustainable, right? To sustain this vision and create this vision in terrestrial reality in a way that it is lasting. Right. And I think that what Venus learns here also lends a lot of support to this Jupiter Uranus conjunction, because Venus is also in a sextile, which is a nice communicative aspect with both Jupiter and Uranus. Right. So I think there is and in traditional astrology, Venus is casting a ray. It's casting a supportive ray towards Jupiter and Uranus, so it can see them, it can resource them, right? And to think about what it's like to be resourced by Venus, right? It feels really good, because Venus likes nice stuff. Venus likes, you know, fine fabric, nice smells, good flowers, good food, good wine, right? Candlelight, you know, all of these things that like bring pleasure to the senses, right? And if we think about Uranus as the planet of revolution, right? And Jupiter as the planet of expansion, right? We can think about what is it like to have an expanded revolution, right? But maybe not a French revolution and reign of terror, but what is it like to have a Venusian revolution? Right? A revolution of pleasure, a revolution of the senses, right? A revolution of joy, you know? And I think in the times of darkness and suffering, right, a really radical act is to experience joy, to experience pleasure, and to share joy with others, because I think that suffering begets suffering. Right. And we see this with the way that trauma is sort of inflicted and handed down, right? That we, by responding from a wounded place, we tend to inflict that wound onto other people. But if we can transform that and transmute that into joy, right? And to the experience of pleasure, the experience of safety in ourselves, and share that with other people, that's a revolutionary act, right? And if we can increase joy in our little sphere, right? If we can increase the Venusian influence in our sphere, I think that has great ripple effects. And one of my favorite astrologers, Carolyn Casey, said something to effect that our problems today are Venus problems, right? In the sense of lack of green space, right? Lack of leisure time, lack of like the ability to create art, right? For art's sake, without it having to be a commodity that we need to like support ourselves, right? Lack of fresh air, right? Lack of all of these things that these Venusian things like beauty that bring joy and ease to the nervous system that bring pleasure to life, right? Living in a war zone, that there's less access to that. Living in, you know, adverse economic circumstances, there is less access to that. Living a normal life where you're needing to work two jobs to be able to afford your rent, like there is less access to being able to experience beauty, right? And this creates disruptions in the nervous system, right? This creates feelings of tension. This creates stress, right? This is the antithesis of ease and pleasure. And so I think that what I would like to offer is to think about what a Venus revolution might look like, you know, and how we can support that in ourselves, in our nervous systems, and with each other and in our communities, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the activist Audre Lorde always talked about, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote pulled up, but the importance of doing nothing so that we can recharge ourselves, so that we can offer service to others. Because if we're not offering that sense of care, you know, and not capitalist care, face mask, bathtub care, we're talking like sleeping and eating and having sex and burning candles and just really stepping into that Venus space, which is the healing space in some capacity. Like, it resets our nervous system, just as Jonah said. And so I think that, like, just to reiterate, what would it look like for you to have a pleasure focused routine, right? Or a nourishing routine? I know that I've been very dysregulated since this move. I was sharing with Jonah some of the kind of hard experiences that I've had down here. My dog was attacked the other week, and it was in the cone of shame and eye drops and antibiotics and all of the things. And Dragon is on the mend for those of you Dragon fans out there. But I actually got a dry erase marker and wrote on my fridge, like, eat something green, wake up in the morning, you know, sit, fucking meditate. Do your meditation practice, do your journaling practice, eat something delicious. It's okay if you want another pastry. You can go get another pastry. It's fine. Like, no one is going to like regulate that except you. You know, what would it feel like to take a nap, or just go look at the water, or go look at a tree, or, you know, down here it's cactus. That is radical work. And I think that the Venusian revolution, like, we should make a t-shirt. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I support that. Yeah. And I just want to touch on another thing that I've been thinking about in this chart, and something that's up these days, which is Mercury's conjunction with Chiron, which is happening this week, I believe, Wednesday or Thursday. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but is pretty well activated in this eclipse chart. And also Mercury will be retrograding and making three conjunctions with Chiron during that journey. This one that's happening this week, and then another one about a week after the Aries total solar eclipse, and then one more, I believe, on May 7th, when Mercury is direct. And one of the things that this brings up for me, and I'm doing a lot of thinking about Chiron these days, but we have the archetype of Chiron, who is the wounded healer, and we have the archetype of Mercury, who is the messenger. And one of the ways that I've been thinking about this is part of the Chironic wound. Chiron is a centaur, so half human, half horse. And I think that schism right? The human part that is longing for the divine, that realizes it's sort of like divine origins, that has that kind of like higher mind and the sort of consciousness of a human being, right? And then the animal parts, the instinctual, the terrestrial, right? The parts that are maybe like driven by instinct and passion and desire, right? And I think that core wounding in Chiron is like, how do I hold both of these, and how do I balance both of these, right? How do I reconcile my desires and urges with my sort of visions and longings, right? And I think that Mercury, as this messenger who can go between the Olympian world, the terrestrial world, and the underworld, gives us an opportunity to sort of weave these things together. And I think about the caduceus, the staff that Mercury holds, which is these two snakes that are intertwining. Right. And to think about the ways that we can knit together or intertwine the animal part, right, that is just sort of survival based, right, and the human part that is recognizing that there is something more, that has a higher level capacity for higher level consciousness, and how through the interaction with the messenger, right, do we blend these things and weave these things together. And Mercury is also the god of the crossroads, right? And so I think we also have the opportunity to choose a pathway now, right? To choose a pathway towards healing, or a pathway towards like sitting in our suffering, right? And, you know, when it's laid out like that, it's like, yeah, I want to choose healing, duh, right? But that's not always the easy path, right? The sitting in our suffering is usually the easy one, because we're very familiar with our suffering, and it sucks, but at least it's safe, at least it's known, right? And so I think that over the next month or so, we're going to get these opportunities again and again and again to choose a path that might be strenuous and difficult and unknown and scary, but that might be the path that leads to greater integration and healing of our wounded parts, right? And so I just wanted to bring that in as well, because I think that is also a piece of this.
It feels like the cocoon, it feels like the sprout just ready to head out of the soil. It has that same energy, right? Chiron's cave is the stinky sock bag that you don't want to step out of. It is the cocoon that feels comfortable and safe. It is the seed that never gets born because it was too afraid or didn't have the nutrients or things that it needed to give birth to itself. The pain cave is a place that we all end up in at some point, right? And we can stay there a whole lifetime. Lifetimes, if you believe in that, right? And yeah. I know that you do so much work with Chiron, and you know, with that in your chart. We all have Chiron in our chart, and it teaches us so much about like our shame. And I think that's the piece, you know, the takeaway with that, the marriage between these higher ideals and these ideas that we're like beyond the physical world, when we're all sitting here with genitals of some capacity, right? And like, we all have like lust, and we are hungry, and we have a mouth with a tongue, and we want to taste good things. Like we are like these sacks of flesh, like more water than anything else. And to deny ourselves of feeling good is, that's torture, man. And the wound just keeps getting passed on, especially through religious shame, to come back to like fanaticism, right? That a baby is born of lust, right? Like you and I, Jonah, were both like the result of two people having sex together, you know, or maybe more. We don't know what was going on, right? But it's like,
yeah, it was the 70s. it was like the early 80s, right?
Yeah. But what I mean by that is like, there is no shame in that, yet there is like, you know, like you blushing or covering your face when we talk about these words, like we're doing it because it's funny, but why? You know, why isn't it something that's just as routine as talking about like, what did you eat today? It's like, how was your sex last night? Or, you know, that kind of stuff. But a lot of people are not into that. And I want to meet the people who are into that. Let's chat. Anyhow, well, there's your Libra ending, the Venus and Pisces ending to the show.
Yeah, check please.
La cuenta, por favor. yeah, Let's see. So our takeaways are, we're going to let go and release, and we're going to make room for new stuff. We're going to start a Venusian revolution, which starts with ourselves and encouraging other people to just stop and not do as much, right? Like, what machine are we feeding? Are we going to look at our cocoons? Are we going to write our representatives? Because I'm always going to tell you to do that. I think that the Chiron Mercury, that during the retrograde hitting three times, that's bringing some deep stuff up from the back of our consciousness. You know, if Mercury is about our thought and our writing and our speech, there could be some hauntings this month that will lead to some great capacity or great suffering, like great healing. So I hope that you're journaling if that is your practice.
Yeah, and also the second and third one are pretty much right on the U.S. Chiron, because America is going through its Chiron return, and the Aries eclipse is going to be conjunct Chiron at 19 degrees of Aries, and is right next to the U.S. Chiron at 20 degrees. So good times. That's good
information to have. Yeah. Okay. Well, Jonah, any final thoughts for our listeners out there in TV land?
No, just, keep doing what you're doing. Do what feels good.
Do what feels good.
Yeah. Okay. I love this idea of the Venusian revolution. And yeah, I guess my closing thought is, think about what you can spill out of the bucket, right? To maybe make a little bit more room for the pleasure, right? For Venus. Right, for the and I think that Venus is a conduit between Earth and the divine. Aphrodite was always coming around and like seducing mortals and hanging out with mortals, and is one of the only Olympians who like spends a lot of time hanging out with humans. And so I think that Venus, the principle of love, is something that really connects us with the divine, or it's a way that the divine comes down and hangs out in the world. And in a world that is threatening to rip itself apart, Venus is the attractive principle that holds everything together, right? It is a primordial force that when the world was forming is the thing that kept everything together so that we could have life on this planet. So,
are you saying that love is the glue?
You know what? I might be. I was going to say that love is the answer. Now, what's the motherfucking question?
I'll leave you on that. Thank you so much for listening to the Inspired Astrology Podcast. This is Lauren K. Hickman for now, of Ursa Day Healing Arts. You can find me on ursaday.us, on Instagram under the same title. It's Latin for bear. Jonah Emerson Bell, always a pleasure. You can find him at Blind Stallion Space Wizard on Instagram or campwizardcamp.com. He puts out a show every fucking week called The Melee Report that's available on SoundCloud. And it's one of my favorite texts that I get all week. And I'm so appreciative of all of the efforts that you make. It was, you know, a Venusian effort. It was a Jupiter effort. And it's just you singing your songs to the universe, right? It's like your kind of, your hymn. What was that? What's that Greek dude that does that?
Orpheus.
Orpheus. It's your Orpheus move.
Yeah. It's my, Orphic hymns, I guess. I've never thought of it that way, but, that's a beautiful way of conceptualizing it.
Yeah, it's super devotional. Yeah. And, I put out a moon mailer every, you know, bi-weekly, every 2 weeks, I write this massive poetic interpretation of what I see in the charts. You'll also get some ranting and raving, some radicalism, just to think about your life differently, to think about the system that we live in differently. But for the most part, it is meant for inspiration. So you can sign up for the Moon Mailer at ursaday.us. Jonah and I both see human beings and do service readings in the capacity of as astrologer, as mentors, as coaches, tarot reader, Reiki practitioner. So do get in touch with one of us, because that's what makes the world go around in our universe. We do this show as an offering, as a free service, because we love it and because it's good for our brains. and for our hearts.
Oh, also, I do every Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time. I do a weekly astro weather forecast on the AstroStar Live app. So it's a free download. You can find it at your app store. And yeah, you can tune in to catch my rantings and ravings, breaking down all the astro weather of the week. And that's about an hour live talk. And so, yeah, check that out. I've been releasing it on YouTube as well. But with the AstroStar app, you can actually interact with me, ask questions,
send money.
Yeah, send money, send emojis, you know, whatever. But that's a new thing that I've been doing. And that's a great way of staying up to date with everything that's going on in space. So, yeah, check me out on AstroStar. And I believe Lauren's also on that app.
Not as frequently. I think that I've just taken a break just to give myself some space, speaking of Venusian revolutions. But yeah, that AstroStar Live, it's great seeing you on there. And I, you know, take a lot of notes and often am just kind of doing my thing, listening to you. And I get excited to see what hat you're going to wear this week, or what robe or what jacket or what bandana, because you're fun. And I appreciate everything that you do and all the service you provide. So thank you for being in my life. Thank you, Algorithm, for bringing us together.
Right back at you, my friend. Thanks for being here. And thanks for putting this show on and allowing me to be a recurring guest. I really appreciate it. And this brings me a lot of joy to get to work with you in this capacity. So thank you.
You're welcome. I'll see you next full moon.
See you next full moon. Bye.
On the magazine cover with your blue-eyed eyes, read it from cover to cover, looking for you. These are not my people here, I think you know that. Nervous like a wild dog, waiting for the attack. I was living in the Delta, wasting most of my time. You know if I could close the blinds right, I could sleep all through the night. But I seen the tides arising.
Thank you once again for joining me on the Inspired Astrology podcast. This is Lauren K. Hickman of Ursidae. As you heard me, you can check me out on Instagram at Ursidae with a couple of underscores there, three to be exact, and at my website, ursidae.us, where you'll learn more about my mentorship program, which is a 7-session program, basically teaching all of the intuition skill sets that I use in my personal practice and have developed over the last 20 years. So it's a 4-pillar process of energy, meditation, perception, and wisdom, working to build the foundation for your own intuition practice, your own service practice. Really, the focus is on true service, which is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I offer astrology sessions. I offer distance Reiki sessions. If you are in the La Paz or Baja area, please do get in touch if you're interested in doing in-person work together. I'll be here for a little while. And other than that, you can sign up for the Moon Mailer, which is my bi-monthly offering. This is a new moon and full moon insight meditation that I have provided for the last 5 years, if you can believe it. So that'll go direct to your inbox, and you can get more information about that at ursaday.us. Well, folks, until next time, stay inspired.
Grateful for the buzz, it's a place to sit down. Let it smatter.